let me say just a little bit about myself to start with, just to indicate from where I'm coming. I've had a chance to get acquainted with some of you and vice versa, but not all. Obviously, we bring to any kind of a discussion our own baggage from the past, who we are, and our life experiences. Each of those is valid for us. We do not insist, as Lutherans at any rate, that we all have the same kind of either A, life experience, or B, spiritual experience. That what ours is valid for us, and we need to recognize that and affirm that for each individual. I served as parish pastor for 23 years, during which time I have wrestled with this question in more counseling and grief situations than I can count. About 3 years ago, not quite, I resigned from the parish in order to do a couple of things. One was to work in the secular world for a while to gain some experience outside the parish. Another was to complete an advanced doctoral degree, both of which I have now done. During that time, I spent the first year working for Children's Home Society of Washington, and we saw the director for that on the video the other night, and it was fun seeing him. And second year I worked as an admissions representative for an airline travel training center out in North Miami Beach, Florida. And now this year, my wife and I are here in the village working on a way in which we feel we can serve the larger church as well as be enriched ourselves in the process. We've been here since the end of May. We'll be here, it looks like, until about the 1st of July or shortly afterwards. And I've appreciated the opportunity to interact with a variety of people and appreciate the opportunity to share some things with this group here this morning. So just that by way of introduction, in terms of my own, a little bit of my own journey and struggling with that, I found working in the secular world, as well as for a social service agency, which is also, quote, secular world, unquote, that it's harder to be esoteric in terms of approaching an issue, because you're having to deal with the realities of job searching and unemployment and personal crises rather than once removed, which I think frequently happens in the church. We live sometimes almost vicariously there, and it's a whole lot easier to tell folks how they ought to do things than it is to struggle through that whole process yourself. And it's one thing to have read books, it's something else to have lived, you know, those life experiences. And I think that's essential, that we all have an opportunity to do that. What I'd like us to do this morning in order to get started on that, let me simply highlight what we're looking at here. Trying to design something for our time. Let me double check this. We've got from now until 10:15, is that correct?
That's correct.
And then from a quarter to 11 until quarter after 12 or thereabouts?
12 if there's someone on Dish TV, which I imagine there
is. Okay.
Is there?
Okay. So we've got two segments here. Okay, fine. In trying to design something for this morning, I was conscious of, first of all, the overarching theme for the winter program, folks, and that is the church as a healing community, is my understanding of the overall topic at any rate. Secondly, I'm very conscious of the fact that the last session that you were together, you dealt with the ministry of the laity, that is the laos, the people of God out in the world, outside of the walls of the church. And you can figure out how I became aware of that, even though I wasn't here at the session. Okay. So trying to put those two together, then, with struggling with the concept of the will of God, seems to me that our purpose for this morning, which I'd like to suggest at any rate, is that we work here at becoming aware of the will of God as we have understood that or experienced it or come to terms with it, and also how to be the healing church in times of crisis and tragedy. And that divides itself neatly into two segments, so we'll work at the first one here in the first hour and work at the second one in the second hour. Just so you have some sense of where we're coming from and where we're going. Does that square, first of all, with your understanding of what the group is about, and secondly, what it is that we are to be about this morning? I like to think of crisis as an unexpected opportunity. I guess it reminds me of the first assignment I ever received my first day, my first year at seminary. We got a paper assigned to us. The topic was God. Yeah, go.
Yeah.
Good. Let's start by asking you to each of you to think for a few moments in your own experience when you have heard on the occasion of a tragedy the phrase, "It was the will of God." Now, I don't want you to say anything for a minute. Think back in your life to times when you have heard, on the occasion of a tragedy, somebody say, "It was God's will." Or, if you prefer, what has happened in your own life, or the life of a friend or relative, that you thought was the will of God. Take about a minute, if you would, to think back through that time, either in your own life or in the life of somebody else, first, second, third person, when that was either said or expressed or thought or whatever. And just live with that for about 60 seconds. That story, whatever it was for you.
I think it was the example that Fritz Norstedt was using, how when he, back in the 50s at his neighborhood, a young girl was just run over by a drunk driver, and he went to talk to the parents of this child, and they said, "Well, we're not sad, it was God's will." And he said it was all he could do to just not shake these people, because it's a very unhealthy thing to do, say that, especially after tragedy like that. And he said, "In 1 year, 2 years, it'll get back to you." I guess it did.
Okay.
At the flip of that, Clarence Sylvester was in an automobile accident on Highway 30. Madison, Illinois, for all intents and purposes, he's dead, but they brought him back, and he's alive today, and his parents and others said it was God's will, and I really have serious doubts about it, because of the life he's lived since.
And was God's will that he still
that he was, no, yeah, that he was still alive.
Okay. Somebody else?
Well, speaking of accidents, car accidents, I was in one, and another friend of mine who was in the accident who was hurt, actually myself, says that or believes that it's God's will that the thing happened, and I'm sort of in between. I could see if it didn't happen, things could have been much worse in the future for all of us. But I don't know if I want to focus on God's will as being that severe. But then again, I look at it as, well, I thank God that it happened. So I'm sort of looking at the effects versus the cause.
Okay.
Is that clear?
Mm-hmm. Some other stories.
I remember when I was about 18 or 19, I had an experience of depression, which at the time I thought, at least at that point, looking back, I don't know if it was the case, but I had some real tricks with my head at the time. It was very frightening to think that something like that could be imposed upon me, which is the way I looked at it at that time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Some may have heard me mention this, some acquaintances in Papua New Guinea, where two things. First of all, they felt very clearly it was the will of God that they were there to start a ministry by boat among the islands of the Pacific. Their daughter died a couple months after they came because of something she contacted there. That also was the will of God. The ministry never came about, but both the ministry they felt strongly, and then their daughter's death, but that was the will of God. It was their own expression of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Two things came to my mind. The first was after my father died from a heart attack. It was my mother's way of coming to terms with it, saying that it was God's will. I definitely had problems with seeing it that way myself, but I felt it very difficult to argue with her in that very vulnerable situation, if that made sense to her. And another incident was when I got that scholarship to go to the Vancouver School of Theology, and it was such a coincidence that I ended up in Vancouver instead of other places that I'd that had my priority before Vancouver, and I was really you know, happy about being there, and profited a lot from it, and I saw it myself as, what a coincidence that I ended up here and with these people, etc. And some of my friends said to me that, you know, it's the will of God that you came here, and it struck me that difference in interpretation when I saw it just as coincidence and not really reflected on it. And the third thing is a more social cultural thing, how certain roles and expectations and the role of service often has been imposed on women, calling that the will of God, and how certain Christian virtues have been imposed, especially on women.
Mm-hmm. Okay, some other stories? We're going to come back and work with these, but I want the opportunity for everybody to share one if you have one.
Some of my thoughts are adding paralleliness in that I think rather immediately I tend to think of hearing the will of God in reference to death experiences.
Okay.
Several of those are shared. But then thinking of experiences in my own life, I thought of things more in positive, of some moves and job changes I've made, and feeling very good about them, and thinking of it rather in that way, that it was more positive that way.
I think of one thing, it kind of relates to what Yana said about women in the church, and at the time I was a Mormon, and I was questioning my not being able to be in the priesthood, and the elders of the church at that time told me that it was the will of God that I couldn't be in the priesthood, because in order to compensate for the fact that I couldn't have children, or that I could have children and men couldn't, they could be priests and I couldn't. So it was kind of a... It was that, you know, first it's the will of God that I couldn't, and then it's the will of God that I could have babies.
Okay, if you want to share one later, well, feel free to do that as we work with this. Something else may trigger for you. One of the things of which I am very conscious is the fact that there is hardly a day that goes by there's hardly a newspaper that gets read or a magazine that gets read that somewhere does not lift this whole issue up for us in one way or another. One of the things that we have experienced as a nation relatively recently was the explosion of the spaceship. People have worked with that, or tried to, in the same kind of a connection. And in the Lutheran, which is the magazine of the LCA that comes out twice a month, except during July, August, and December, the editorial of a month ago, February 19th, Ed Trexler talked about that event within that context a little bit. This time, of course, there's letters responding to that. This individual, who happens to be from Watertown, Connecticut, writes, "Editor Trexler still has not personally resolved the age-old problem of evil in the world." And then he quotes from the editorial, which said, "It was certainly not God's will that brought the shuttle to such an end," unquote. "We would have thanked God if the Challenger's crew had miraculously escaped. I maintain that we should likewise let God's will, not mine, be done, even when we don't like it, cannot understand it, and certainly cannot sanction it. It is His will, even when bad things happen to good people. God will help us through it all, but no one ever told us that faith would be easy." By the way, I was one of the 11,000 teachers who applied. Let's come back and work now with this and the other stories that you've shared here. As you think of that, where do you come down, first of all, on your understanding of what God's will is? And secondly, in terms of how that applies to that particular situation, how do we ascertain all that? And are there some differences in that? Let's work with that for a while. Let's start with the first one. John reminded us of Fritz's sharing that story. And I think you said, John, that he had indicated that that came back to haunt, or whatever that was. Spin that out a little bit more as you recall that, or as you internalize that for your own perception, wrestling, understanding.
Well, a few things come to mind. One, Fritz,
you don't have to write this on a paper. It's going to be graded, by the way.
Spelling counts?
Yeah.
Okay. One thing. Fritz basically summed everything up by saying we'd be a lot healthier people if we would just accept the element of chaos in the world. Nothing is truly in control. It's a chaos. There is an element of chaos in creation. And that's one thing. And the other phrase that's going through my mind is something that Einstein said. He said, "God does not play dice with the cosmos." And they seem to be conflicting for me a little bit.
Okay. There is chaos, that's one thing you've said, mm-hmm. Okay. And God is not a dice player or a puppeteer or a marionette director.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How about some of the other stories now as we work with this? Where are you with that?
Well, I think a lot of people in general, in reference to death, come down, so to speak, on God's will in those situations as their comfort.
Okay.
That's following in line with what you're
Okay.
And
That's a way in which they come to terms with it?
And personally, when I think of a lot of really positive experiences, the way things are happening in my life, I guess that's how I've tended to pick up on it personally, in a real positive light. Maybe I've been very lucky to not have experienced such a bad personal crisis in a negative way, or a close personal tragedy, then maybe I'd be quick to want to find comfort in that light.
What is it, you suppose? You've made some suggestion. That it's a way in which we maybe don't have to deal with it any further. What is it that prompts us as human beings if not us, some other people, depending on who we're talking about at this point, to excuse something in that way, or to explain it in that way? What is it that causes us or prompts us to want to do that? Would it be true then that for cultures that were not exposed to the Enlightenment, that they struggle with that or don't struggle with it or in a different way? Would that follow from what you're saying? How about in New Guinea, for example? The Enlightenment may or may not have, I'm talking about, you know, the French, you know, philosophical focus here, which Elmer's referring to, may not have impacted the tribes in Papua New Guinea in quite the same way that impacted Northern Europe and the United States. What did you encounter there in terms of, either in terms of the story you shared or other experience? How folks dealt with that?
Well, the story I shared had to do with Australians.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it wasn't the Papua New Guineans. Among the Papua New Guineans, the animistic belief, which would have been what there was before there was any of the Western scientific influence, it was very much the spirits within everything, and therefore one of the cultures, as you would have read about in many peoples, where sorcery, very many different kinds. Sangoma was one kind of sorcery, there was another kind of sorcery, another kind. And all had, there was a reason for everything that happened in terms of the evil force. But it was, what we term sorcery was a way of. But that there were those humans who could cause this, especially.
Let's shift just a little bit here for a minute. In terms of each of our being here at Holden Village, what were some of the things that came about in your life that resulted in your being here, you know, this winter? Do you attribute that to the will of God? Do you attribute it to something else? Where are you with it at the moment? Carolyn suggested we deal with something in it other than just pure crisis and tragedy. We're not suggesting that it was either a crisis or b a tragedy that brought you to Holden, though it might have been. Where do you see the hand of God in terms of your life bringing you here? Or do you see it in a different kind of a way? And how did you discern it?
All this thing that was on this winter program, more. I don't see it. It seems more like consequential. And came here thinking, man, this is great. This is where it's, you know, this is where I'm supposed to be. Still believe that. But like Homer's saying, that's not the only possibility for me this past winter. and looking at the seeing things as God. His presence is with me always, or with us. But how much of that intervening with his own makes me question the accident I was talking about earlier, or other things. They're just possibilities. How much does God really, how much of God's will is there? That's, to me, has been, it's been frightening to look at that. Yet it's been going on, this whole theme, this whole time I've been here. And I feel uncomfortable if I could just say that God wasn't at all in any of these bad things. But then I have to say that God wasn't at all in any of the good things either. That presents a problem. So where is God, first of all, in our life?
How about a more mundane, if you want, whatever. The fact that I understand you and Cindy traded places or whatever here a week or a few days ago, you ended up being in the kitchen, and if somebody else had worked for you that afternoon, you probably wouldn't have had the experience with your arm that you've had. Have you wrestled with that one at all?
Well, I don't even recall that taking place that way. So I haven't wrestled with it. But anyway, what I realized what happened to my arm is that I wasn't paying attention to what I was doing. I was talking about the Swedish Navy.
That'll do it.
Yeah, I was. Right. And handling this film cutter, which is very sharp, and just right out of my hand. It's an accident, Why? Whose accident? Why? Well, because I wasn't paying attention. Going back to that, actually, why did that happen? Because I did a few things that increased the possibility of that accident happening. And that's what Fritz was saying. How much of this is accidents? And how much of this is we have to own up to?
And yet, are there not people, even though you are not saying that, who... had they had a similar kind of an experience to you that afternoon, would have said, well, it was God's will that this happened, do all that sanctimoniously and so forth. Or to put it in more classic kind of terms, family that decides to go for a drive on Sunday afternoon, they don't live at Holden, obviously. And they all pile in the car, and they come over the crest of the hill, and there's another car that meets them in their same lane, driven by some guy that stopped at the local pub for an extra hour on his way home from church, was under the affluence of alcohol, like we used to say. Was that God's will, or was it, as you say, simply the result of some conscious or unconscious human choices and decisions that were made along the way to get them into the car at that time and at that crest of that hill, depending upon how fast they were driving and him leaving the tavern at that moment and so forth and so on.
Right.
And to what extent, if any, was God active in those situations or present, and is there a difference? Mm-hmm. How do you deal with that? How do you respond to that?
Well, isn't it very important you respond to it in the right way? You may have done all this before. I just came yesterday. But if you're dealing with healing and healing prayer, the moment you get into the idea that this is God's will, if the patient dies, it's God's will, it seems to me you can block out a great deal of the healing for which you might be a channel as a healer. This is one of the great blocks, I think, in healing, this idea. Well, it's God's will, nothing can be done, thy will be done. Angus Sanford and McNutt have a lot to say, and Kelsey, on this. Once you begin to understand that you are a channel, as I said before, God depends on you. Loki the poet says this too, I am your hands and feet. And so this is a very dangerous idea that has been held, I think, by many, many people. But I think in the last 25 years, there's been a great movement in the other direction, that it isn't always God's will. First of all, it's often our fault that these shocking things that happen.
Secondly, a great deal of illness is overworked. Workaholics. I don't think any one of you may be a workaholic. I hope you're not. I was. But it wasn't God's will. I feel strongly now that I was brought near to death, but through spiritual healing, I was brought out of death, because the people who healed me didn't believe it was God's will that I was in the state I was in. So this is a profound question if you're dealing with healing all winter long. I'm sure you may have already handled this if you're into the healing literature. You know these things, but I had to point out in case there was somebody here who didn't know about them.
And Sanford's books and Kelsey's books are in the bookstore,
yes,
too.
I'm sorry, I love to do the commercials.
She's a great straight person for me.
This is the basis of all these studies.
Yeah, right.
Read and you shall learn.
Alana?
I don't have any problem thinking of any good things that happen as being God's will, because I think God ultimately wants us to be whole people and happy people and fulfilled people and all that, because I think that God is good, God is love. And so anything that departs from that doesn't necessarily, I don't think that I think of that as being God's will. I have trouble thinking of that. I mean, I might be showing my ignorance because I didn't get a chance to finish the book. So, I don't know. But that, it doesn't seem to fit with my whole idea about God and God's relationship to God's people. So.
Since you mentioned that, let's note the three of the things that Weatherhead talks about. This is a classic, by the way, as Alana, you know, as we, she and I talked about before class started, even though it was published in 1944. I think you said he was very progressive, I think was the term you used. Not in language, as you reminded us, but in terms of thinking at any rate. that there are some things that were said there that I have found to be helpful over the years. And as you notice, it's not too difficult to get through. But this happens to be available in the Faith Bookstore. Yeah, right, okay. Otherwise, I wouldn't have suggested it to read ahead of time. How much is it? I think it's
30% off.
I think it's $1.95 minus your 20% or whatever.
$2.95.
He makes some distinction between the intentional will of God remember the other two?
Circumstantial
will of God. And what was the third one?
Ultimate.
The ultimate will of God. Okay, do you recall what the distinction is between those three that Weatherhead makes?
The intentional will of God cannot include anything that is evil or ugly.
Okay. Okay, and as Alana said earlier, that God wills us, you know, to have a full life, rich and fulfilling and satisfying and whole and in relationship with God and other people. That's the intentional will of God. Okay, how about the circumstantial will of God? What does he do with that? And what's the difference between that and the first?
How he acts through, you could say, the evil forces or sinful nature, and how things are channeled in the negative experience after the intention is messed up by man.
Okay, the circumstances change.
His plan.
God's plan. Does not mean that God at that point is absent, but is present to uphold and to sustain and to carry on through. Yeah, and that as Paul says then in Romans, to work together for good for those who love God. How about those who don't? No, let's come back to that one. But at any rate, God is present then in those evil circumstances, in the midst of all of that chaos and ugliness and evil and so forth, and that God's ultimate purpose is not going to be thwarted just because we blew it, or somebody blew it, or whatever. Okay?
So in the circumstantial, in spite of evil and in evil, God's will might have been overcome by people, but not ultimately, but just for the time being,
right?
The example he gave in the book was, it was not God's intentional will that Christ be crucified. Under the circumstances, what came about, it became his plan. It was his circumstantial will.
Or to apply that then to some of the situations that you shared with us at the outset this morning, in terms of times of tragedy or crisis or even unexpected opportunity, where maybe looking back you could see that, well, the intention got thwarted because this happened or that happened or I did this or somebody else did that. But that God was present then, and you know, the circumstances got altered. Think of that in terms of some of the stories that you shared. And is that well? Let's stop at that point and pick up on some of those stories, and maybe could you share with us then something that you can see there that may have changed or whatever.
I was really going to go to something
okay,
you
go
asked
ahead.
Us just a bit before, and
okay.
Still are being emboldened and how we saw that. Last year at this time, I would have certainly not felt that the intentional will of God would be that I be emboldened
okay.
Now.
Okay.
But if I look at it in this way, I could say the circumstantial will of God. And here, I also believe the circumstantial will of God could have been worked out if I had made a decision to be a different place, he could still have been working his will, but this is the one that became possible and so on. I think that is showing those two different things as far as my own personal situation if I look at it in that way.
Okay.
I don't see it in the particular story I told.
Okay.
I don't know the ending of
yeah.
that story.
Okay. Okay. Well, none of us have the whole picture of any of them, and I think that's one thing we have to keep in mind too. As we view any of these issues or questions or life situations, we view them from only our little tiny perspective, and we don't see the whole picture either in terms of how other people, you know, are involved, and certainly in terms of how God sees it. Yeah. Greg, did you start to say something?
I was going to just clarify or ask a question about what Lisa mentioned in the circumstantial will of God. If the, I had a hard time when I read the book understanding whether the author was talking about God is present as a comforter within an evil situation, or that God's presence is within the evil.
Okay. How did the rest of you perceive that?
Presence of a good God is a comforter within a, what we perceive as an evil situation, or that God's will can be done in what we perceive as an evil situation.
And
that
to me is different than your first question. God is in the evil. And now you're saying that God's will can be done within the evil. I think it's saying God's will can be done.
Yeah. Well, God, within God, well, God within the evil.
Okay, are you asking, does God will evil? Is that what you're asking?
Well, what we perceive is evil.
Okay. How do we respond?
Sure.
God wills evil?
What we perceive is evil.
He started out by saying what the book was saying. I don't think that's what he was saying about the circumstantial will, that God willed it. He's saying that God, under the circumstances, then worked out his plan in a different way.
That's what the author is saying?
Yes,
yeah.
That's what he first
Okay.
Well, I think
Kevin?
And that, I'm worshiping a God who wills evil no matter what the end is. And I really like Carolyn's, I didn't get out of the book, but she mentioned God's intentional will wasn't to send Christ to the cross, but that even in that tragedy, something awesome was worked out. And how it reminds me of the scripture of all things work together for good for those who love the Lord. And how God is present in the evil that is a product of our chaotic world. It reminds me also of the story that is in response to your question, how God works things like that, of a missionary in China, it must have been 100 years ago, whose wife was killed while the army went through, and he was a missionary doctor, and I think she was a nurse, and just bloodily killed and murdered his wife. And you know, what kind of response, I don't know if he went through the questions of, you know, is this God's will, but I think where God's will was evident and where it is an issue, not so much in the act as much as in the response, was his response. He followed the army in a passionately medical response, tending the wounds as the army, the very army that had killed his wife, moved forward in their advance. And the emperor that was leading the army heard about that and was just so awed by this response that he cornered the doctor and said, what sort of fate is this that you react like this? And ultimately then that emperor became Christian. And it makes me think of, I used to think a lot more of this and be bothered a lot more by the whole issue of God's will and intervention. It reminds me of one saying I heard was, God's intervention is limited to our intercession, because I think there is, I think there's some truth in that. I haven't put it all together. The other thing, and I might have shared this once, was sort of a spectrum of how that intervention happens for me. I like to believe that God is just so personally involved in everything that goes on in me that I can be comforted in that care. And so I call that type of God who even cares what color gumball comes out of the machine, a bubblegum God. On the other end of the spectrum, one that's more scary to me would be what I call a spinner God, who just sort of spun up the world, sent it out there in the galaxies, and stood back and said, here are the rules, here's gravity and physics, and if you send your kid in front of a car, you're going to get a collision, it's not going to be good. I don't feel as happy with that one. It fits a lot of reality better for me sometimes. But I think what I do believe is that there's a what we're doing will and a who we are will, and the Bible addresses the who we are will. And maybe in terms of what we're doing, God is a bubblegum God who doesn't really have a lot to say about whether we go right or left or take the road less traveled or not, but leaves that up to us and is very involved, and even in all the scriptures that deal with who we are, not what we're doing, with while these things happen, who we're becoming, you know, while the wife was killed, which couldn't have been a good God's will, what was the response, you know, to follow and forgive and heal the army and let the good come through that. And I am confident that God is a bubblegum God when it comes to who I am and who I'm becoming and who I'm supposed to be. And so that much I feel peaceful about. It makes me believe there's some personal stuff going on.
Okay. But you can't believe that God wills evil.
No.
Okay. Greg?
I guess responding to what Carolyn said, I didn't feel the author addressed that question of circumstantial evil very well. Because he talks about the ultimacy of the will of God, and then when he talks about the circumstantial God, the circumstantial will of God within an event of evil, then you have to, it gets back to the question of, does God use what we perceive as evil as that of God? Is God using what we perceive of evil as a working to an ultimate will of God?
Okay.
You can't separate the intentional, circumstantial, ultimate within his hypotheses. I don't think the book surrounds itself within those three frameworks. So if you're going to take intentional and ultimate, you've got to deal with circumstantial. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, the... So if God ultimately wills good, if God is good and ultimately wills that,
that's your starting point.
That seems a hypothesis of
good.
The book.
Okay.
Would you say that?
Okay.
That then, when they talk about circumstantial evil, you have to come to a basis if you believe evil exists. Where does that come from? And if it comes from anywhere, what purpose does it have?
Do you have an answer to that?
No, I don't. Yeah. I don't know if the author did either.
I was going to say, if you did, you'd have your picture in the cover of Time magazine next week,
right?
Because nobody's come up with it yet.
Yeah.
So if you want to get famous, that's one good way to do it.
Yeah. The way he dealt with it, not that it's attempted to solve that, but he would just have to deal with it. By saying the attention, the will of God can be defeated by the will of man for the time being. And that's what he kept stressing, that's the circumstance for the time being. And his reason for that was that if this were not true, then man would have no real freedom at all. And so he comes back to this idea that having given man free will, then there is the evil, and that this becomes the circumstances under which his plans are thwarted, so to speak, for the time being, not ultimately.
Okay.
That's what he deals with it. As you said, no one has been able to come up with that question for all answer.
Elmer?
Well, yeah, that might... I was going to try to come at this from the people who are outside the faith they're thinking. Of course, that's the question that they state. Mm-hmm. That cannot be passed over. Why God gave such freedom? Well, it is the issue that you're discussing. It isn't really the will of God. The better thing to put on the board would have been, how do we get our understanding of God to fit the reality of evil around us? Because we start off on the premise that you also could write up that God can't possibly participate in what we understand to be evil. That's an assumption. It's not an assumption around people on the outside of the church.
When
they see that possibility that directly participating in it. And again, I'm not asking us to become like them. I'm saying that's the thing that's going past, it seems, one another, in our outreach to people who are on the outside. And that's actually an important part of my concern. I am concerned about Christians who are really assuming the goodness of God, leading us to that's terribly important. But another part of that is, how do we reach those people who have clearly said, I used to be, or I never was, or whatever it is, but I can't stand a God who gives us the kind of freedom that allows kids to get killed and bombs to be dropped and all those things. So I'm just trying to have that part.
What do you do with that for that person? What have you done with it?
I tried to get on the side of thinking how much harm would be done to me or anyone else if I accepted the fact that in some way God does participate in what we call evil. I keep saying that because we don't know. When Clarence was revived, we all thought it was great, and therefore the will of God. Now, looking back, I'm not too sure that there are many people who would say great, and I don't know what people would say about the will of God. How much harm would be done to God? So far, in my understanding of some participation by God, I don't think it's lessened God nor messed up my life by accepting that possibility. But so, again, what I do is try to enter into their struggle.
Yeah. Which I think is the only thing we can do. And I think ultimately is what God does with us. Yeah, Alana had her hand up and then Greg.
Yeah,
Well, that's what I was thinking when I read that in the book about God working through the evil of the cross or the evil of human people. And I thought, well, I mean, it was prophesied in all of the Old Testament that that was going to happen. So it wasn't necessarily, you know, that God worked through all of a sudden, you know, mm-hmm. we came up with this evil thing and we crucified Christ. And so then God worked through that particular thing to bring ultimate good. Well, that didn't make any sense to me at all in light of the Old Testament. And so that just shot that argument all the four holes.
Except that we read the Old Testament through New Testament eyes, obviously.